Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present. This is Behind the Scenes, where you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. This time, I'm asking John Turner, and at Colonial Williamsburg, he's a manager in program development, a specialist for religion. How did you get into that?
Well, people had known me here for a very long time, but in 1990, after a number of years of trying to get religion into the regular interpretation in Colonial Williamsburg, we went to private donors, and they helped fund the startup of the religious studies program, which started in 1990. And I was the original manager of religious studies and programs, and have continued to be the sort of advocate for religious interpretation here since that time.
Okay, now that raises another question. What do you mean by religious interpretation?
Well, since the 1980s, scholars and fans of 17th and 18th century studies began to realize that if you really wanted to understand what was going on in the 17th and 18th century in this country and other countries as well, but particularly in studying 17th and 18th century Virginia, that you had to have an understanding of what role religion played in people's lives. That you had to know basic things like the Church of England was the state church in Virginia, that having an established church changes community life, what it meant to be a dissenter, which was anyone besides the Church of England, and so on. So all of those things had never been actively interpreted at Colonial Williamsburg since its inception. So there was a desire, growing desire in the 1980s, for this to be something that did become part of the regular interpretation, and in 1990 we started that program.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I may very well be. During that colonial period, was not something called the Great Awakening taking place in the colonies?
Yes, the Great Awakening generally is thought to have started in the late 1720s and sort of continued almost all the way to the American Revolution. And yes, it was a time when people, sort of an evangelical spirit was abroad in both in England and in Scotland and in this country. Jonathan Edwards was one of the leading figures. George Whitfield was the most famous traveling evangelist who made 7 transatlantic crossings to do evangelical tours of the east coast of the United States. And he was very successful, speaking sometimes to crowds of 20,000 people when the population of the place that he was speaking was less than that.
Nothing like being popular, I've always said. Do you find that visitors here learn things that they had not known through the religious programming, if you will?
Yes, we do. One of the things that became obvious after a very short period of time was that, A, people really wanted us to deal with the subject. They were glad we were now dealing with religion on an active basis. And, B, I mean, as you almost, what you said was a precursor to saying that a lot of times people are not even very active, people who are active in their own faith are not really that well aware of their own faith's religious tradition or history. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, people were often learning things about their own tradition that they didn't know by coming here.
Well, I was reading some history because I had to, and I'm interested in it. And it reminded me, even though I knew, that for the longest kind of time, the Anglican Church was the only church you had. There was, and when Baptist and Methodist started to come around, they were rabble-rousers and troublemakers.
That's right. Of course, as I said earlier, the official word was dissenters, but you're quite right also. I mean, sometimes people did use words like rabble-rousers. And in fact, one of the bad words for a dissenter that used by the establishment in the 18th century was the word enthusiast. That was not a compliment. Okay. If you were an enthusiast, it meant that you, well, one of the quotes is that these enthusiasts screw people up to the height of religious frenzy and then drop them with no nothing to support them. It was like they were teaching people that the relationship with God is a personal one instead of a hierarchical one. And the hierarchy was very important in 18th century England and in 18th century Virginia.
Now, I read someplace that the Anglican service was quite, well, I don't want to use the word staid, but not very enthusiastic. And the other, the Baptist and the Methodist were quite often very enthusiastic.
Yes, I mean, again, I mean, the Anglican view and the tendency, the wrong tendency, is to sort of paint this as a black-white issue or a white hat and black hat, good guys and bad guys, and it wasn't that. The Anglican Church was one of the most benevolent and understanding, sort of intolerant, established churches that existed in the world at that time. And they did actually allow official dissenters in their midst, which some of the established churches around the world did not. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's true that the liturgy of the 18th century Anglican service was set out, of course, it was written in the Book of Common Prayer, and it was the same. I mean, you could depend on the liturgy and the form being followed the same week after week. And for people who have decided and people who have undergone this awakening that was talked about in the 18th century, that sort of got in the way between them and their personal relationship with God, because these were people that thought that in some cases education wasn't necessary because God would speak directly to the people and would empower people that he wanted to be preachers without having any formal education, that they would just, God would tell them what to say. And so it was this direct kind of relationship instead of a top-down relationship where you have a bishop and a king who was, or a king or queen, who was the official head of the Church of England, and then the Archbishop of Canterbury and the bishop and so on down and the minister. And it was very much a system, a religious system, where people knew their place. And the some scholars, and this tends to have a sort of cyclical life, 50 years ago or so, scholars were saying that the Great Awakening was one of the sort of seed beds, as kind of could be thought of as a nursery of the American Revolution, that without the freedom that came with people being convinced that they could have direct relationships with God, that you wouldn't have had, without that, you wouldn't have had an American Revolution at the time and place that you did. And that became a kind of unpopular view, and it's kind of come around again, mm-hmm. and scholars are saying similar things again today.
When you said that, I was thinking about, I think I'm correct, that there was an African-American Baptist church, the first one in the colonies, was here in Williamsburg. And one of the things that was considered was that maybe if you could have freedom in religion for the slaves, you might have freedom in political terms. And the slaves began to think of freedom at least partially because of the big Baptist church. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and it's a long history. And first of all, back to your first statement, we can't prove that it's the first, but we do believe that the one in Williamsburg is the first Baptist church that was entirely organized by African Americans. There are earlier Black Baptist churches in the country, but as far as we know, all of them were organized by white missionary efforts. And the one in Williamsburg was entirely organized by African Americans. And the oral history, oral tradition, puts their beginning in 1776, which we can't place them on paper until the 1780s. And we do have character or actor interpreters that portray both Gowan Pamphlet and William Moses, who were both the sort of founders of that congregation in the end of the 18th century. But yes, the church and the Baptist church I think it's fair to say as a general statement that the Baptist church was more appealing in the Baptist faith, and the style of worship was more appealing to African Americans than the Anglican style of worship. In the Anglican church, the African Americans were sometimes permitted to sit with the families to whom they belonged, or sometimes stand at the back of the church, or if the church was crowded, stand outside the windows. But depending on the master, slaves were sometimes encouraged to attend Anglican services. But the sort of stereotype of what they were hearing in those services was, again, part of the hierarchy, you know, keep in your place, slaves, be obedient to your masters, and so on. The Baptist church, for a while, at the end of the 18th century, the Baptist church managed a colorblind society. There were black preachers preaching to white congregations, there were white preachers preaching to black congregations, and so on, and there were mixed congregations. This happened for almost two decades towards the end of the 18th century, but by the end of the 18th century, the groups had split. sort of apparently on their own. I mean, not because they were forced to, but the African-American groups pretty much decided they would rather worship by themselves, and the white groups started worshiping by themselves. But yes, the African-Americans certainly saw, and it's still true in the black community today, the importance of the church, the importance of preachers and the religious community can be directly seen connected to political action in the African-American community, more so than until relatively recently it had been in the white community.
I wonder if anybody has ever studied that to see why. Do you know?
Yes, I'm sure they have. And one of the black historians is Albert Raboteau, who's written about the importance of the church and the minister in the black community. I think part of it is because early on, while slavery was still in existence, the realm of religion and preaching was really one of the only leadership roles that African Americans were allowed to have. So this sort of traditionally was a strong point of leadership for the African community.
Well, in the South in the 60s, it was still true.
Of course, yeah.
You know, that's you said that oral tradition was the Black Baptist Church here was founded in 1776, but you place them on paper in 1781. I think I'd rather take 1776. It's, you know, it's a lot more meaningful date for that sort of thing. It's talking about what happened in religion in Colonial Williamsburg and Colonial Virginia, for that matter. What do you find is the hardest to tell people for them to accept? Is there anything that they just sort of rebel at? People can be highly peculiar about their religion, and if you tell them something they don't want to hear, they don't want to hear it. And if you've never had anything, that's fine. Maybe I'm crazy.
No, actually we have, but they've been, it's sort of been a while ago. I'm sure 5 years ago, or maybe more than that, I could have answered that question very quickly, but it's kind of...
You mean it's gotten better?
Well, I guess it just hasn't come up as much recently.
Okay.
But yes, I mean, in the past, the people would come up that there are things, and I'm trying to think quickly on my feet because I just hadn't thought of that issue for a while. One of the things that people would come with, and that particularly people who do believe that they are strong, active members of a particular tradition, sometimes would come here with misconceptions about their own tradition. I alluded to that earlier, but once in a while, you know, we would portray, I mean, in the past, since 1990, we've portrayed Methodist itinerant preachers, we've portrayed Anglican ministers, we've portrayed white Baptists, we've portrayed black Baptists, we still are portraying a Presbyterian, we've portrayed Quakers. Sometimes you get people that would come and their tradition didn't begin until sometime in the, let's say, 1830s or 1840s, and they were quite convinced that their tradition had been here since the beginning. I mean, and so that, some, you know, someone would say, well, why aren't you portraying this church? I'll just pick a church. Why aren't you portraying the Disciples of Christ? Well, because they didn't start until the 1820s. And we stop, you know, at the latest, we stop at 1790, if not before that. And so that kind of thing. Occasionally, for many, many years, we interpreted that the only person of Jewish descent that we knew of that was here during the colonial period was Dr. John de Sequeira. But the problem is we can't prove that his contemporaries knew that he was Jewish. He didn't leave behind any will or any indication that he was practicing Judaism or that anyone else even knew that he was of Jewish descent. We know that his mother was a Sephardic Jew because of the background, but we don't know. No one ever made any comment. You know, no, we don't have any comments from his contemporaries that say that he was Jewish. They just say Dr. de Sequeira. So we do have, contemporary to his time period, there's a gentleman from Yorktown that left very clearly in his will that he was Jewish and he left money in his will for Truro Synagogue to take care of his elderly mother and so on. So, and there were a group of Jewish businessmen in Norfolk, and they were in the starting in the 1780s, there was a Sephardic congregation that came en masse and settled in Richmond. But Dr. De Sequeira is the only person that we know had a Jewish background as far as family in Williamsburg, actually, who lived in Williamsburg. But again, we don't know whether his contemporaries knew that or not. But occasionally, the reason I brought that up is occasionally someone will come and say, well, what about the Jewish presence? And we have to say, well, there wasn't any except for businessmen occasionally coming in and out.
Wasn't there a synagogue early on in New England?
Yes. The Truro Synagogue. There were several synagogues in New England. There were also synagogues in Savannah South Carolina. What's the?
Charleston?
Charleston, yes. But not here.
That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.